unnecessary harassment or unusual time and days of entries, or there's a procedural method in notifying that we will be coming forward or something like that.
Well, that doesn't seem to be necessary either, and it's not objected to by the industry. And dropping in without prior notice.
The current law seems to be okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next person we have is Ms. Annie McKenzie. And by the way, this is the last witness we have on this bill. The attorneys are still working in the next room. What I would ask to do, if the members are agreeable, is give them a couple more minutes and we can take Mr. Brown's testimony on Senate Bill 92. We have a few minutes between the time Ms. McKenzie finishes and any other discussion we have and the time they come out of the other room. Ms. McKenzie, thank you for your patience.
Thank you. My name is Annie McKenzie. I'm from Seldovia, and I'm currently working as a volunteer in the Alaska Environmental Lobby. As you all know, the spill, Exxon Valdez oil spill of March 24th, pointed to the need for the administrative penalties and environmental audits called for in House Bill 409, and the Alaska Oil Spill Commission also pointed to the need for these provisions. 28 to 37 states have adopted administrative penalty systems for the enforcement of their environmental protection statutes. They seem to work well. They have not proven to be an undue burden on industry, and they have not proven to be unconstitutional. In addition, both the EPA and the General Accounting Office recommend that all states adopt administrative penalty systems to manage and enforce their regulations concerning the environment. Mr. Chairman, the Alaska Environmental Lobby strongly supports this bill.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony. Questions for Ms. McKenzie? If not, thank you very much. Is there anyone here in the room who would like to add anything, whether or not you've signed up? Okay. Well, anybody online who has any further testimony? Fine. Any member of the committee who desires to say anything while we're waiting for the attorneys to come out of the other room? Representative Martin.
Well, I just had one thought, just as a layperson, if I have professional staff here and everyone else is having so much trouble over that one sentence and they're still debating, I hope it's not the intent to just rush it through without others having a chance to evaluate whatever we come up with as an amendment that's understandable by average citizens. Of course, corporations and oil aren't average citizens, but they do have people.
They have the same rights as the rest of us.
Yes, right. But I hope it seems to me that you're in a rush to get this out, and with you two gentlemen and the chairman realizing that's a very crucial decision, those three lines, that would not another day be valuable tomorrow. Instead of them rushing, I hear them really having a good time in there. They're probably really at each other's as they should be. Digging deep, what do we mean by this?
Maybe you'd like to observe and then report back.
I see
we
you
had
two
a Mike Tyson fight last weekend.
I don't want the people to feel that we're rushing this thing through whatever they come up with.
Of course. Representative Gall.
Bless you. Bless you. Thanks. You're a good man, despite what they said about you.
Okay. We are on, we have a teleconference for another 15 minutes, folks. While we're standing by on this bill, I'd like to invite Mr. Bill Brown from the Division of Motor Vehicles to address us. Let's move on to Senate Bill 92. And this is the governor's bill. Representative Brown is Mr. Brown is representing the administration. And Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Brown, Division of Motor Vehicles, Department of Public Safety. This bill basically contains several provisions that DOV feels would improve its service to the public and streamline its procedures, and some of it basically brings the law into the line of practices that we're doing at this time. Do you want me to go through it section by section, or the preference on?
Sure, your pleasure. Why don't you summarize it, and make sure your toggle switch is up there so people in the line can hear you. Summarize it and then go through briefly section by section. You don't have. We're on Senate Bill 92, folks.
Yeah, I don't have it.
You don't have it. Diane or Sheila?
Oh, I'm so sorry, folks. I do. Yeah,
okay.
It's just it has the wrong.
What we have is the Finance Committee substitute for Senate Bill 92. Mr. Brown.
Okay. basically get on Bill Brown Division of Motor Vehicles. It is housekeeping measure. As far as Section 1 of the bill, it gives the department the authority to cancel an identification card.
Sorry, is this the Senate Finance CS? Is that one of them?
That is correct.
It is.
The number in the, it's offered 41489.
Thank you.
It's a longer bill than that, isn't it? It should be 8 pages long.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Again, Section 1 gives the department the authority to cancel an identification card. We've got the authority to issue those cards. We have the authority to cancel a driver's license, and this gives us the authority to cancel ID cards if it's fraudulently obtained or something along that line. But this time, we do not have that authority, and we're finding more and more people using fraudulent identification to obtain an ID card, then go into permanent funds and so forth. This gives the authority to cancel that.
What I would like to do, since this has a number of sections, as you go through, if members raise their hand, I will call on the members, and we have Representatives Gall, Martin, and Davis on Section 1.
What's the penalty for giving false information when you apply for the ID card?
This section
does not relate to that.
Indicates that it would be a punishable fine up
to
$100.
No, sir. I'm sorry. That's the penalty for the failure to return the card. What's the penalty for giving false information when you apply for the card?
That I don't know. That would be punishable under unsworn falsification, criminal code.
Thank you, sir.
Could you? I'd ask Mr. Caden to look at that penalty, and that's the criminal code for unsworn falsification.
Insofar as you'd be going after them for the first violation while you seek to return the card on the second, is that correct?
Basically, we would go after them and seek the return of the card when we find out it was fraudulently obtained.
Well, I guess what I mean is you'll spend a lot of money trying to find this person unless the person happens to answer his phone and you say, please return your card, and then they do. If it goes beyond that, you're going to probably be spending a good deal of money, and I wonder if you'll spend that money, given your demands on your personnel, to collect a $100 fine. So I'm sort of assuming, and it would ease my mind if it's correct, that you'll also be looking for them to prosecute them for making false statements when they applied for the card in the first place. Is that logical? Or?
Mr. Chairman, basically our procedure would be the same we do now for a driver's license. We do send them a certified notice asking for the return of the card. We do leave it up to any law enforcement agency if they feel they want to prosecute or go after them for the unsworn falsification. Division of Motor Vehicles does not. We then put notice on a computer system that card has been canceled and it would not be reissued.
I see. Well, I'm sorry. The last thing I want to do is delay this, but yet...
By the way, the answer to your question, unsworn falsification is a Class A misdemeanor.
And do you notify the part of your department which deals with law enforcement that crime has been committed?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Basically, that's the branch that we find out from. They are doing an investigation, determine the card was obtained fraudulently, and notify us.
Why would they do such an investigation?
A lot of it is through permanent fund dividend at this time. And they determine if there was a card obtained fraudulently, ask us to cancel it. At this time, we do not have the authority to cancel it.
How would it come to their attention that the card was obtained fraudulently through permanent fund dividend?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know entirely. I know the investigators do look at different items, and maybe two people have the same Social Security number.
Okay, I won't take any more of your time on this. I'm going to ask you if you would process an inquiry for me, please. Trying to find a real polite way to do this, just a little difficult for me. I'm not able to compute your answer, sir. I don't see that. I'm sure it's correct, but from the information I've been given, I don't understand the relationship between the permanent fund dividend application and the knowledge that this person has ever applied for an ID card. And then it seems to me that the person has committed a crime. And that crime has come to the attention of the Department of Public Safety, and there doesn't seem to be a procedure for, in effect, that's predictable for processing that crime. And this bill, of course, deals with saying if you don't get back your card, we're going to fine you $100, but I would think the troopers would be looking for that guy on a Class A misdemeanor to begin with. And once you got him into custody and was serving his year in jail, you could probably deal with the $100 fine. I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but it just seems that this will give you the power to spend a lot of money to collect $100, whereas there's no procedure to initiate an investigation on the misdemeanor charge. And I may be all wrong about that, and I guess rather than take a lot of your time today to answer what may be a trivial and unimportant question from me, maybe you could just sort of help me at the next hearing and walk through this process a little more clearly. How did you find out about it? What did you do about it? Because this seems like a tertiary thing compared to the initial offense.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, again, basically we are finding out from a law enforcement officer, and that may be an investigator for the Department of Public Safety.
I see.
They are bringing criminal charges generally against the individual.
Okay, so you're saying that you would have no way of knowing that this card was falsely obtained until those things that I'm referring to had already begun to take place, and you're merely being asked to go out and collect the card, so to speak, and you don't have the power to do that in statute at this time.
Being asked to cancel that card so they don't renew it or get another copy of it.
And
that's
don't have
what
the
we
power
don't have
to do
the
that
authority
at this
to
time.
Do at this time.
Got you. I don't need any more information on it. I'm quite satisfied. Thank you, sir.
Representative Martin and Representative Davis.
Yeah, I think Representative Gall has said it cleared up a lot of concerns in my mind. Actually, it seemed to be a good spin-off from when we allowed the interfacing of driver's license and hunting license and
right.
other things with the Department of Revenue for application to fund dividends.
Thanks.
So it's another good spin-off, but it put the burden on his department to cancel all these things that were falsely attained somehow or other.
Thank you. That helps me understand that part, too. Thanks a lot.
One concern I had is that it seems to me that is a lot of people involved in the barroom trade. Is that where a lot of these cards are developed? False identification, and how can you cancel something that was falsely obtained in the first place if it wasn't through your auspices?
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I totally understand the question.
Well, if someone in to get identification to go into a bar room saying he or she is 21, and they're really not, but false identification is made all over the city, then what responsibility do you have to get that false identification? Why should it be your burden?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure we have, right now we don't have the authority to go after that. Basically, the law enforcement officers or whoever catches this person that has the fraudulent identification generally confiscates it at that time.
Right.
But if we don't cancel it, that person can then walk back into our offices and obtain another copy of it. That's the purpose, to cancel it.
Yeah. But you didn't have it in the first place. The guy was just going around to different bar rooms. How do you even know you have nothing compared with in your office, do you? I can see you being responsible for what you gave out on the false information. But I can't see you being responsible for someone that went to some hobby shop or wherever they do this underground work. And then the police picks him or her up, and they're not 21. They may be 18, but they got a driver's license. That's everything else is perfect. Why should you be responsible?
Mr. Representative Martin, maybe I can answer your question. Yeah. As I read this section, this doesn't require them to go out and do it. It just gives them the authority to cancel the license, the identification card. It simply gives them the authority to do it.
Okay. Where do you have
Representative Davis, did you have a question, sir?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Representative. I think that's the
No, that's getting around there somehow.
Representative Davis.
Actually, I had a question on a different section, but
Why don't we let Mr. Brown go on, and we can certainly revisit these sections. I'd like him to explain the sections, and then as you have questions on the individual section.
All right.
Is that okay?
Fine.
Okay. Other questions on section one? You can go take a look if you want. Okay. We are going to adjourn this meeting at 3:15, and I either will have an answer or we won't from the behind the other door there. Section 2. Mr. Anything else on Section 1 you wish to mention, Mr. Brown?
No, sir.
Section 2.
Okay. Section 2, I'll come back to. That goes with Section 4. As far as Section 3, that removes a current section of law concerning foreign consul license plates. Basically, Section 9 of this bill repeals sections authorizing the issuance of special plans to consular officers. The United States Department of State, the Office of Foreign Missions, is now responsible to issue consular license plates and requested we discontinue issuing such license plates. And therefore, 3 strictly removes an item in regards to consular license plates.
That's the last one. The last digit on line 29 and the first one on the page 3, line 1. It just eliminates subsection 6.
Strictly the comma on line 29 of page 2 and the number 6 on line 1 of page 3.
And does that refer to another section in the bill here?
Another section of the bill refers back to that.
What section is that, Mr. Brown?
Section 9.
That's section 9 of the bill. So you've also covered just now section 9, and section 9 is on page... It's one of the repealers.
Page 11.
Yeah, page 8, line
11. Page 8, line 11.
Mr. Brown, please continue.
Section 4 of the bill provides a method to register interstate rental vehicles and specifies how these rental agencies' registration fees are to be prorated. Basically, for trucks, it would be on miles. For trailers, it would be the number of trailers within the state. At this time, there are only 2 rental agencies that do interstate rentals, and this just authorizes them to be prorated based on the number of miles driven on trucks, again, and number of trailers they have in the state. Section 2, which I skipped over, authorizes the department to suspend or revoke the registration of interstate rental vehicles if it's determined later that the owner is not complying with the law. And the law also gives the department the authority to check their records to make sure they're given the proper miles, proper number of vehicles. And this is the method that's used in the other states in regards to registering interstate rental vehicles. It has nothing to do with intrastate rent.
Representative Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this is the part that I have a question on. And I actually don't see where this is actually covered in the bill, but in the title. But my question speaks to your existing provisions in this, and if you could, if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind sort of enlightening the committee, or at least who's here, on this issue. It says here that the department determines a vehicle. Registered vehicle is mechanically unsafe. Page 2, the top of the page. To be driven or moved on the highway, vehicle way, or other public property in the state, and the vehicle has been seized or impounded under AS 2805091. So this means that you currently have existing authority. Under this section, you have existing authority to seize vehicles that are unsafe, like, let's say if they come into a weigh station. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, no. As far as Section 2, it's the authority of the department to suspend or revoke a registration, and that is not being changed. None of Section 2 is being changed.
I understand that, except for number 9.
Right.
But it says here that the department determines the vehicle is mechanically unsafe, so... It isn't just with registration. It has to do with your department's authority to determine what's mechanically unsafe on the highway.
Mr. Chairman, Section 2 is basically, again, us denying to register a vehicle. They're saying we shall not register a vehicle that's unsafe and has been seized or impounded under another section of law. The Division of Motor Vehicles does not seize or impound vehicles. Personally, don't know where that comes from. That's been in law since.
I understand it, but it says the department may suspend or revoke registration. So
right.
It looks like the department has the authority. If they pull into a weigh station, they have the authority to revoke the registration of that vehicle.
If the vehicle has been seized or impounded under another section of the law.
They're smiling.
Mr. Brown, there's a lot in this bill, too, and I want all the committee members to hear what you have to say. We will revisit this bill, but not this week.
Okay.
And we now have our two attorneys. I want to go back to the other bill, and we thank you so much for your patience. I'm sorry about the personal... What? We'll talk to Mr. Brandt. It'll be under unfinished business.
We'll do our best to bring it up next week under unfinished business.
There's a couple other things I need to visit with you about.
Sure, as quickly as possible. We're sorry, if I may, I'd like to just also apologize for the delay and confusion here.
And I think the record should reflect that Mr. Brown has gone way out of his way to assist us today, and we do appreciate that and the division's courtesy.
Mr. Brown, I'd like to talk to you on this issue, and I'm sorry, this is an issue I'm real interested in, so maybe we could have a conversation and we'll clear up some of these things and we'll take this.
Could I make a suggestion that be done?
I'm interested too.
Mr. Bloomberg, Mr. Davis, they have some concerns. Anything that you could do to coordinate with them prior to the next hearing, then we could really be more expeditious for you. I feel quite uncomfortable keeping you here for 2 hours and then failing to be able to really move through the bill. So.
Okay, sure.
Thanks a lot, sir.
All right, great.
Oh, where did Mr. Hemingway go?
He has a copy of the language.
He's taken it to another state out of jurisdiction.
I'll go.
He's back.
We have Representative Davidson and a quorum of the committee. Okay, why don't the two attorneys join us at the end of the table?
Did you get a chance to look at that?
You're one of those attorneys.
And you like it?
This is getting dangerous here. It's 3-3.
Let me copy this.
Three attorneys, three real people, right?
Yeah. Michelle and I are both.
Are you sure?
All right. I gather what you're looking at is Mr. Wenig's proposed language. For the record, are you going to, Andy? You gonna have somebody copy that or?
Yeah, the copyright here is busted, so somebody would have to go down the hallway to get it.
Well, we can just sort of pass it around the table, yeah. I think. Would you please, Mr. Hemingway or Mr. McDonough, Mr. Hemingway, why don't you tell us what this proposed amendment is, where it goes, what it does?
We're back, by the way,
on House Bill 409.
This is the language that was proposed by Mike Wenig, and Mr. McDonough and I both looked at it and don't have any problems with it. It basically eliminates the buzzword collateral and just gets down to talking about judicial and administrative review.
Would you read it to us? I didn't see that.
All right. It would replace the sentence that we've been discussing with the following.
This is the sentence on page 3, lines 17 through 19?
Yes.
And the one on page 5 also?
That's correct.
Okay. Why don't you give us the words?
Except as provided in this section, the validity, amount, and appropriateness of a final administrative penalty is not subject to judicial or administrative review. And then the other one would be of a final compliance order is not subject to judicial or administrative review.
For what it's worth, I think that's a great suggestion.
That's except as under this section, so that they do have a judicial option there.
That's correct.
Great.
I think that's wonderful. What I would like to do, gentlemen, with your permission, is to have, it's sort of suggesting the goal, but with a little twist. I'd like a motion to adopt a new CS with this language at both locations in the bill. And we will have this new CS before us on Friday as the first order of business. And it's my intent to move it at that point, unless any member of the committee, any of the four of us here, have any problem with that tactic.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gall.
Thank you. No, I have no objection. I'd like to make a motion. First of all, I would like to request that Department of Law provide a very brief memo to the committee for the benefit of absent members. So that I should be true to my word here. We're not going to rush anything through. We're going to move this language today. We're going to adopt it into the CS. And then before our motion, or at the time of our motion, at the next meeting, members will have an opportunity to understand what occurred here and understand what it means.
And I would request that the new CS and the memo, with just dealing with this one change, be given to all members of this committee before floor time tomorrow. so that we can deal with that. That should be enough time.
Just need you here for the motion.
We need you here for the motion.
And I move that with the language change that was just discussed, which specifically, would you say again specifically what it is on the table?
It's in front of you. Would somebody please mark that as amendment number one?
Amendment number one will... Well, it's not amendment number one because we never adopted that CS. It's language that's going to be in the CS that we're
going to. I would like, for the purposes of discussion.
Very good. Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt for purposes of consideration CS for House Bill 409, numbered 6-1741J Bradley 2-2190, and ask for unanimous consent.
Objection? Hearing none.
No. Hearing no objections, that's before us. Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one specifically that on line 17 and 19 of page...
Three,
and on lines
15 and 16
on page 5, that the sentence which currently reads compliance order is not subject to collateral, judicial, or administrative review be replaced with a sentence which reads as follows. Except as provided in this section, the validity, amount, and appropriateness of a final administrative penalty order are not subject to judicial or administrative review, and I ask unanimous consent.
Before we deal with that on the vote of Mr. Hemingway?
Yeah, Representative Gall, I believe that language that you read in would work in the administrative penalty section, but it doesn't work in the compliance order section. We'll have to revise that language slightly to describe exactly how it works.
Conceptually, can you state what that revision would be?
Well, let him work on that.
Well, I just...
Sure.
Conceptually,
I believe that you were referencing the compliance order language just
so
now, and the language there would be something like this. Except as provided in this section, a compliance order is not subject to judicial or administrative review.
Excellent. So that is my amendment. I ask unanimous consent. I've requested the memo to explain it to absent members, and I'd like to ask the chairman to ask for objections.
Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. This bill will be before us in a new CS for the first order of business on Friday. I intend to take no more than 10 minutes on this, only discussion on the one of these two new amendments. I'm considering them in bank. Yes, Representative Davis?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you, and also I think it's excellent that we had the ability to have people out in the audience participate in this as well. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you all very much for participating online. It is now 20 minutes after 3. This meeting is adjourned, and we appreciate the extra 5 minutes also.
Thank you very much.
I don't think we got it. It's too bad.
Next time.